Yes, Honest Actors is back with brand new episodes every Friday. To help me continue releasing new episodes without a sponsor, or to say thanks for your favourite old ones, click the support link in the episode description. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. It's a one-off, feeling generous, good deed for the day sort of thing. Think of it as bumping into me and buying me a drink. To find out more, click the support link. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
Yeah, mine's a large red.
I hate those guys.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
My name is Brona Taggart, and you're listening to the Honest Actors Podcast.
Hi, my name's Jonathan Harden, and you are listening to episode 10, believe it or believe it not, of the Honest Actors Podcast, sponsored, as always, by TodayTix. If you want great offers on theatre tickets, access to day seats on your mobile and exclusive front row lotteries, you need TodayTix, the ticketing app that lets you see theatre differently. To get tickets with no queues and no fuss, download TodayTix now from the App Store and Google Play. Do it. See, I've been waiting for this episode for a long, long time. It has been a long time coming and has been the subject of much debate in my home. You'll find out why in a little bit, but here it is, episode 10 of the Honest Actors Podcast with Brona Taggart. Enjoy.
30 seconds ago, I pressed record to do the ident and you said two words, worst nightmare. What's going on there?
I didn't want to do this and you made me do it. I'm joking. I have never been comfortable with the whole just talking about myself.
We're going to get round to chatting about why that is, but before we get to that, as a way in, how did you get into acting?
I got into acting what I think is relatively young. I think I had an idea that I wanted to be an actor when I was very small. According to my mom and dad, I was about 4. And I said, yeah, I wanted to be an actor when I grew up. And there wasn't really much to do in Belfast during the 80s if you wanted to get into acting. So it took me a while to kind of find clubs and theatres that were putting on like productions and things like that. But I think it was when I went to my secondary school, which had an amazing drama department, that I started to audition for things and do like theatre work, professional theatre work. As a school kid, really, I think the first show I did at the Lyric Theatre in Belfast, I was about 13. So that was probably like my first show, and it was a professional gig, and I think we were getting paid, I can't even remember, but we got out of school early, as we sometimes had matinees, but every night we were on stage doing the kind of adult Christmas show.
If you didn't get paid, maybe you could kind of contact Equity and get that chased up, back pay, plus interest, maybe.
Really glad I did this time.
So, theatrical family, performance interested family?
Zero. No, I don't mean they weren't interested. I mean, they're interested in me as an individual. we're not interested in Brona, full stop. But in terms of performance, no. Like, not even, I can't even find anyone in cousins, aunts, uncles, nothing. Definitely not my mum and dad. Definitely not my brothers and sisters. Yeah, I was just seen as a bit of a an odd one. Like, when you know, and they'd meet like people out at the shops and stuff when you were away, and you were like kind of beside the trolley just waiting, and they were always like, this one's into acting, she's going to be an actor, I don't know where we got her from. Like, I don't know how many times I heard the phrase, we don't know where we got her from. Like, so it was always just a surprise in the family. Like, I remember my mum and dad looking at me running around the house performing and thinking, we honestly don't know where you came from or where you got this bug.
What's your earliest memory then of performing, not necessarily on stage, but of putting on a show?
I think I was always at it from like a young age. I don't know what the earliest one is, this is really embarrassing, but like the ones that my mum and dad tell me about, the ones I've seen photographs of, are performing every Thursday night when Top of the Pops was on, in full costume, in the living room, push the chairs back. I think my mum had to take like my brothers and sisters out on a Thursday night because it was only my dad left in the house and lived really like he didn't want to be there, but like I took over the living room and danced to Top of the Pops. Like, enjoying that kind of thing.
What was your showstopper?
Madonna. I think I remember I had a Madonna number. I don't know what it was. I've seen photographs of a really disturbing outfit that I made up myself upstairs and then made an entrance. And yeah, just danced around the living room to Top of the Pops. I don't know why, because I'm not exactly like musical theatre. I don't know why Top of the Pops was my thing, but I remember going to see a pantomime. I was talking about this with my mum actually recently, because we're home in Belfast and the theatre's not there anymore, the Arts Theatre, and she says, do you remember going there? And I says, yeah, I remember you took me to a pantomime there to see Puss in Boots, and I must have been tiny. And she remembered it too, and then she said about, there was an actress that played the cat in Puss in Boots, and she didn't say anything. She must have been like a physical performer, and I was totally entranced by this girl playing the cat, and I just thought this pantomime was like the best show ever I'd ever seen. And I came home and I pretended to be a cat for, I don't know, whether a few days, a week, I don't know. But
at which point your mum and dad decide, we have to do something about this?
Yeah, they were really good that way, because they were clueless. And as I say, like I wouldn't know if I was a parent in 80s Belfast and my child turned around and says, I wanted to act, like, where would you even start? I remember, actually, I know what they did. They got the yellow pages, because that's what you did. You got the yellow pages. It had everything. And
psychotherapists.
Yeah, psychotherapists. Maybe that's what they were looking at.
Aversion therapy. Aversion.
That might have turned out better. They looked up. They were just looking for anything to do with drama. They were just, I remember them sitting down and looking through the book and just like baffled. They're like, what are we going to do for it? Because they were really good that way, in terms of like, as kids, if we said we were into something, they thought it was a good sign, and they tried to get us a class or something kind of related to it. The nearest thing they could find, though, was at first it was speech and drama. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. But it was the only thing that was kind of nearby that we could get to at a weekend, and it was the kind of only thing that was related to acting.
Okay, so there's a kid who is pretending to be a cat who is prancing around the living room as Madonna, but looking at you as an adult doesn't turn into a West End performer in terms of musicals, and speech and drama wasn't close enough to what it is you thought even then you wanted to do. When is the first time you remember doing something that felt right, like you fitted, like it was what you'd been chasing or looking for?
Do you know what? It was probably my secondary school. It was probably our drama class. I remember in first year, our first drama class, I couldn't get over, like, for a start, that twice a week we were going to have an hour-long session of just drama.
Twice a week?
We got it twice a week.
Twice a week?
Yeah, I remember us getting it like on a Monday and a Friday or something. What did you get?
Once a week for an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's why yous weren't as good as
No,
us.
It took us a long time to catch up, like, in fairness. We were behind by an hour a week over 7 years. So what is it? Like, it's a lot.
No, I think we started off as, like, 2 hours a week. Well, the school itself was very, they were known for its drama department. It was a school that, like, the BBC and any films and stuff were in town. Like, that's where they went. If they were casting girls, Belfast girls, for anything, they went to St. Louise's. So it was already known for that, and that was why I went there.
It's not all it's known for, in fairness, St. Louise's. I'm just saying, for those listeners who may not be aware of St. Louise's Comprehensive College, the Brown Bombers, that when you say film producers to BBC, but go to, it implies, I think, to the outsider that this was like the cream of the cream, right?
Oh no. Right? They went there for a very different reason.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
It was on a very notorious road in Belfast, especially during the Troubles. It was called the Falls Road, and it was
still is.
Right, true. On the Falls Road, a very famous road in Belfast, and it was at the time the largest single sex school in Europe. When I went there was close on 3,000 pupils, all girls, and it was a large Catholic comprehensive college run by nuns. And I suppose we were considered very real Belfast girls, which is why we were...
Yeah,
probably...
you were very Mike Lee.
All right,
Belfast
Jonathan,
kids.
We all can't just sit up in our Rathmore uniform.
Let's not make this about education system in Northern Ireland. I think that's of limited interest beyond our dining room. So, at this point...
It was the drama class at St. Louise's that we, for an hour, we would get into improvisations. I thought that was amazing. Like, the teacher taught us to get up, give us a scenario, and away you go, and... Like, whenever the bell would go for the class to stop, that's what I hated. I just thought that was brilliant. An hour of just, like, you know, kind of getting lost and things, making things up, kind of
so
becoming characters.
That becomes a weekly thing most of the year, all the way up to the time that you leave school. Over the course of that, at 13, you do the thing at the Lyric. Are there any other professional jobs between then and leaving, or is it mostly...
I can't remember specifics, but we would have we auditioned regularly for things. I remember auditioning. Oh no, we're not allowed to mention. I remember auditioning for things like In the Name of the Father, and which was a big, massive film, and we got to audition with, like, Daniel Day-Lewis, who came to the school, and all our mums and dads had told us to try and get this autograph of this, like, famous English actor, but we were so confused because we were only in the room improvising and doing scenes with this guy from Belfast, but it turns out he was already doing the Belfast accent. We didn't know who he was, but, like, it was things like that we were doing, not every week, but, you know, every few months, that was kind of thing. BBC would be in for dramas, theatre, you know, as I said, like the Lyric and stuff. So I think I remember doing the odd pieces here and there. It obviously wasn't allowed to interrupt our schoolwork like that much, but they knew that, you know, the girls that were serious about drama, and the drama teachers always tried to help us to be released, to kind of go and do, like, little bits of film and little bits of, you know, theatre workshop days or readings. I remember doing theatre readings in, like, the Mac and places like that. You know, we would have experience. I thought that was great, getting that experience as a school kid. I just thought it was amazing, because I don't know how much that would have been on offer, like,
elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, jumping forward then, and kind of concluding this section, I guess, we've already had a first professional gig at 13, but as you admitted, your memory of that isn't entirely clear as to how that, you know, in terms of how professional it was, where you paid, all that stuff. And I guess as well, at 13, were there other kids? Were you sharing performances and stuff like that?
Yeah, there was other,
so,
like, school kids.
So what is the first time then, after school, that you stood on a stage and were the only person playing the role in the company and knew that you were getting paid at the end of the week?
That wasn't until after uni, actually. We did productions in uni, and probably the less said about those, the better. But it was after that. I graduated from Queen's, and I was really, well, thought I was really, really lucky. I got cast, I think, that summer. Like, you know, we just graduated, and I got cast at the end of that summer in a production with one of the big kind of theatre companies in Belfast, which was going to be their kind of autumn show. That was my first kind of theatre credit, like my adult role.
How'd that feel?
Amazing.
At that point, in terms of what your expectations were for your career, can you remember? Did you think?
Yeah, I remember. It was myself, another guy that I'd went to uni with, a friend, and then I knew one of the other actors as well. We were all cast together, and I remember thinking, this is a really good sign, because I've only graduated like a month ago and I'm already like employed.
And rich, making 400 quid a week.
They're going to pay me to do this. Whereas before it was just the odd payment here and there. I was like, I'm going to get paid every week to do this. And if, like, you know, if I was truthful, I probably would have done it for free at that stage. It was just, I just thought this was the step up. I just thought this is how it begins. I thought it was a really good sign, you know, and I loved every.
But what were your expectations beyond that? Do you remember thinking, do you have any expectations for what would come after? Did you think,
yeah,
that this is
thought,
me on the road?
Well, this is great, because this is a theatre company in Belfast, so the other theatre companies are going to see me. Maybe, you know, I'll get auditions in Dublin. Maybe this is it. Maybe I can just head over to London, and, you know, who knows? I just thought it's a platform. It was doing, for me, it was so big because it was doing the job. I was suddenly on the same level as the actors that I had been growing up watching in Belfast. And I went to the theatre when I was younger, thanks to school, and I saw loads of familiar faces, actors that I just wanted to be. I just thought they were living the dream and wanted their job. And suddenly I graduated, and with this job offer, I was one of them. Like, you know, I was bumping into them. Like, you know, they were in and out of like the theatre company, or they were coming to see the show. You know, that was the really weird night, seeing those actors that I would watch. Like, you know, they were older than me, but like they were suddenly in watching the show that I was in, and it was crazy. I remember like there was little there was posters and flyers and stuff for it, and it was my face on the flyer and on the poster, and it was just like this is crazy. But it was more like feeling like one of the actors, feeling like a real actor. Like that was definitely the feeling you got from that like first offer. Like you felt, I don't know, like.
And did it work out like that? I mean, did it? How long did that sustain itself for?
No, it didn't. I mean, I was hoping that it was just going to keep on leading from job to job to job. I think I got another couple of jobs after that. God, they weren't in any. I think I did TIE after that. Yeah, that's an experience. But I was, again, I don't remember complaining. I just thought, this is amazing. I'm acting every day. I'm getting up and I'm acting.
And you're getting paid.
And I'm getting paid. And I'm with actors. And people know that I'm working, and like, you know, and people were still seeing it. And then I probably experienced the first kind of few months off, or, you know, whatever it was, for however long it was. And then I kind of realized, like, oh, this isn't going to just, I'm not going to just move from job to job without a, you know, with no break. There's going to be periods of unemployment.
Oh, yes, we're going to get to that. So before we move on to anything approaching those kinds of things, I always ask people if there is a single show or production of any kind, any medium, which for those people listening that don't know of them, have never heard of them, And the ident has been really their introduction to your voice and you. What job would you choose? And because I've let everyone else have two, I'll let you have two as well.
Oh.
What two jobs might you choose that identify you as an actor, that either you're proud of more than others, or that are significant for whatever reason you see fit? What are those two things?
One of them is probably like an early performance. It was years ago. God, I'm trying to think how many years ago. It's probably 20 years ago, is it? No. It's probably about 18 years ago or something like that. And it's purely because it was the scariest thing I'd ever done till that point in acting, and that was a one woman show, where it was just me on the stage for an hour, guts of an hour, and a show called Limbo, and it just purely for that reason. I remember just it was the scariest thing, but being very proud that I'd got through it and that it had, you know, gone okay, and that for that reason, because yeah, that will always stand out wherever I see other people in like one person shows. Like, I like to be able to go, I've attempted that. I know what that's like, because it is so lonely and it's so hard. And sometimes I still kind of think, what the hell was I like, you know, I try to think, well, did I like hesitate or whatever, but I didn't, because it was just a cracking role and it was a cracking opportunity and I just jumped in. But yeah, it was, yeah. So for that reason, I would choose a one person show that I did. And the other one is probably, it's probably a short film that we both worked on.
Well, we also both worked on the Mama and Show. I produced it. Don't forget.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
But go on.
But
ahead.
Did I tell you how good I was in that one woman show?
It was about 43 minutes long.
All right.
And my overriding memory of our one disagreement was, it was in the Belfast Festival. It involved 3.5 tons of water and you standing still for the entire show after a late decision by the director to cut all the movement. Mm-hmm. And I had thought, wouldn't it be easier for us to make some money back if we did two shows a day?
And oh God, I remember.
You, about 2.5 weeks in, like, said,
the rehearsals,
said, I'm not doing two of these a day.
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay.
Oh, you pushed it a bit, did you not?
Yeah,
you're like,
I did.
Come on, I really think we should do
time,
two of these.
It's the one time I think we've really not seen like eye to eye about something. And I remember you going, you were just flat, like, I'm not doing it. And I was just in my head thinking of numbers going, yeah, it'd be really helpful if you did.
Oh my God, I remember. Yeah, I remember now. Jesus, you were a slave driver.
Yep.
I still stand by. There was no way.
Oh, you were totally
was,
right. You were 100% right. I couldn't have watched it twice in it.
Shut up.
Anyway, this short film you were telling me about.
Yeah. Guard, which we only did a year and a half, 2 years, is it now?
Filmed February 2017, but completed May 2017.
And again, it's just because it's the first time I attempted anything like that, which was to write something and be in it myself. And it has flaws, it has problems. I generally can't really watch anything that I'm in back a lot anyway. I can watch it once, but I wouldn't be the type of person that can go back and kind of like, you know, analyze and do it. I just can't do that. So, but I'm sure if I was to go back and stuff, I'd be frustrated and I'd be disappointed and stuff in whatever bits I think where I dropped the ball as an actor or as a writer. But I still am really proud that I said I was gonna do that, because I always wanted to do that, and that we did it and delivered it, and and we have that eye. And yeah, so that's probably
so
the other one.
A couple of things are worth mentioning at this juncture. I've been chatting to you going, how odd is it that I'm not acknowledging that I have a fair sense of your personal history, given that we've been together for 18 and some number of months, years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes up there because you brought up two projects you've worked on together. And I think it's worth me declaring that I am your husband. You are my wife. I know. Shocker. But I also think this is what possibly makes us a slightly different and therefore, by virtue of its difference, a, dare I say it, more interesting interview. For me, this is the first point at which you've said something that I genuinely didn't expect. I did not expect you to pick those two projects. And I'm just interested, given that you have done things certainly that have been better known, that have had international audience, i.e. stuff on TV, that have won awards for other people involved, directors, producers, and at big theatres in London. I'm just intrigued by those two choices. And I guess the question is about how you characterize yourself as a performer. So I asked you specifically what two things define you. Is what defined you as a performer based on those two shows a kind of a independence? That an independent short film that you wrote and co-produced and a one-woman show. Neither of those are things that are, in the normal sense of theatre, huge collaborations with 11 actors and a director and a set designer and a...
Yeah, but I do think it is independence, but I have to say, I think that's only come later in life now, that that's what it... that it's something that I look for or want to kind of keep striving for with regards to work. But I think that's only come recently or in the last few years and stuff. I think when I was younger, I would have automatically gone to like, oh, my first job in London or my first job in like working at the Old Vic or being on the TV. But I've really just changed. That's not, because they were what they were. They were amazing opportunities, and I enjoyed every second of them, and they helped me as a performer. Like, I know I learned loads on those jobs, and I know they helped lead on to other work, but they weren't meaty roles that challenged, like, you know, as in they weren't like a one-woman show. I just had to go in every day, and it was just up to me. And I know it was up to me to kind of not fail at telling that story. And I felt like I was work, you know, that felt like work to me, like, you know, a long day kind of just pulling something apart and then delivering that felt like to me. And now that's the kind of work that I would, you know, love, and doing something like art, because there were big tasks. And I feel proud that, you know, I kind of undertook both of them. And yeah, I would like to be independent, and I would like to challenge myself and kind of rise to that challenge. And I think that's the kind of things I'm looking to set myself, like, even going forward, you know. I'm already thinking of like writing myself a one-woman show. I know I have an idea, I have a character that I want to write about and play, and so there must be something in that, if that's where my mind's going to at the minute. And maybe that's born out of like frustration that it's, you know, they're not coming from elsewhere or as often as I would like. But I think it's a good thing, like, it excites me, and I want to keep attempting it.
Okie doke. So I think that gives us a sense of how you got here and the kind of performer you are. I guess the things that then make us all the same as opposed to the things that make you stand out as an individual are the experiences we all go through and the things that over the course of three series now people have spoken honestly about, and then people listening have got in touch to say, yeah, that's my fucking life as well. Because I know you're a listener to the show, and is that our dog?
It is our dog.
What's wrong with her? I'll pause.
Buy tickets to the best theatre in London the new way. With the TodayTix app, getting great offers and access to exclusive tickets has never been easier. With TodayTix Rush, you won't have to... With TodayTix Rush, you won't have to queue at the box office for hours to get day seats, and you can access big savings with their lotteries. Download TodayTix, the theatre ticket app, from the App Store and Google Play, and see theatre differently. Sorry about that. Sorry if you've been a little bit blocked up. I'm on the mend. Don't worry about it, guys. I'll be here in a fortnight. Don't worry.
The question I was going to ask you is, as someone who has listened to the podcast, what are the moments for you that scream out when you think about it that kind of stand out as being the moments of identification of, yeah, that's how I feel about that? It doesn't have to be specifics necessarily. It can be just the types of things. Because in many ways, then, I suppose that'll help me decide the direction of the chat.
One of the big ones, just in terms of I've experienced that. Mm-hmm. I was so glad to find out this, not just me, was probably Sinead Matthews running down the street laughing at how bad she thought she was.
Laughing at her own shitness, yes. I think is the quote.
After an audition, was just brilliant to hear, just absolutely glorious to hear, as much as I don't want her to ever feel like she was shit, and I'm sure she wasn't. But that feeling of coming out and not nailing it and thinking you played it wrong. Not only did you play it wrong, you played it horribly wrong.
You were just shit. The choices are neither here nor there. What was really troubling was that you just weren't any good.
I have a strange, strange like fascination and enjoyment with hearing about auditions going horribly wrong, like in a way that it just makes me feel like really good. It's like a nervous energy thing. Like, I like people being honest about auditions. I hate people, and we all know people that just always say it goes well or just refuse to open up and stuff. And I like hearing about how sometimes it just doesn't go
well. They always go well for you, right?
I mean, yeah, no, totally. I can't even think of like specifics. It would just be like the usual, just coming out and thinking, fuck, like the scene clicking whenever you leave, and then you think back to the way that you played it, and it couldn't have been more wrong because you've just sussed out what it was, and you don't know why your brain went to the first place that it did. But holy shit, now they'll remember you as the girl.
That's what that was about.
Yeah. Or it always happens too, whenever if you've been for a role on TV and then you watch the person that got it and they play it and you go, oh.
That was much easier than I made it.
That was what they were looking for, you know.
I made it so much more difficult.
Yeah, for myself, yeah. And that's not to say that they were looking for that, and I like to think that we're all being very hard on ourselves, and that sometimes we come out thinking we played it horribly wrong, and we probably didn't. Like, it could have just been something different. They might have still enjoyed it. We'll never know. Hearing that from one of the other interviews was just a big relief.
And like, someone, you know, as great as Sinead as well.
Exactly.
So you don't enjoy auditions, I think. Is that what we're thrusting at, or do you?
I go through waves. Like, it's never one thing. I've never been like, you know, someone who enjoyed them or didn't or doesn't. I used to love them when I just like graduated. Like, I just actually like got a buzz out of them because to me it was I knew that for 10 or 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever I was going to be in the room with a director and a chance to act.
Captive audience of one.
Yeah, and that was I loved that. That didn't like deter me or anything. That was I remember getting an adrenaline high and really enjoying it, like walking into the room and thinking, you know, this is a chance to show them what I can do with this piece. And then it's probably as the years go on and you go through more periods of not working that I think I kind of started to hate them a little bit or worry. And it was probably, you know, second guessing myself, am I making the right choice with this one? And that's when the enjoyment goes out, when you start to doubt your choices or, oh, am I right for this? You know, doubting yourself, you know, let them do that. But, you know, sometimes we do that to ourselves.
And they will.
But, exactly. Oh, they definitely will. But I let that creep in. And now I quite like self-tapes as much as they can be grounds for divorce between, you know, a lot of couples. This is a thing on Twitter. People talk about this in couples because if you're an actor and you happen to have a partner who can help you do the self-tapes, this is a thing. Everyone talks about how it can almost cause, you know, it's frustrating, especially if it's actually, I don't even think the other person has to be an actor. It can be hard if they're an actor because they know what you're going through and they're trying to help and they're trying to give you direction. But then I have a friend who does it with a partner who isn't an actor and they like to direct her also. And I think that would be even worse because you're just like, why are you
doing that? See, I quite like being in a acting couple because I quite like the moments where we're doing a self-tape and you'll go, maybe do it where you do this.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's days and there's takes and there's scenes when you can do it, but then sometimes when they're hard and you're not getting it and then your other partner's trying to help you and you can see that they're also thinking, no, you're not getting it, and they're helping you, that you get even more frustrated because you're going, no, don't you lose it. Don't you get frustrated with me. I know I'm not getting it, or I know I haven't got it the way I want yet, and we're on take, you know, 100. But don't get me wrong, I think if you've got a partner who can help you do the self-tapes, they're great, and I'm starting to enjoy them more because I'm starting to realize how much more in control we are, and it's great that you can just get ready in your own bedroom and walk into the living room and, you know, and do them. I think they're better. I think we're all doing,
everybody wins.
I do think that
everybody wins.
I know there are people that maybe don't, but for me, I just think it's brilliant because you get to
someone said to me the other day, yeah, but you don't get to meet the director. And I was like, I know, isn't that fucking class?
I know. You don't get to piss them off. Or
since when has that ever helped?
Maybe it's just us two. We're just dickheads. When has that ever helped? Like,
oh, you want me to do? No. Because I was, no.
Because I'm actually better if you don't meet me.
Because normally this ends with me running down the road laughing at my own shitness once you get involved. So maybe if I just, you know, can maintain the fallacy that I'm right about this for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Getting the job. An agent we both know, Mr. Patrick Duncan.
Once, is that who it was?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Patrick Duncan of Dealers Agency NI. Way back when, said to me, Jonathan, you know, the only time an actor's ever truly happy.
That's not a joke. It actually sounds like that, but he's going to, he can't let him hear this.
He'll love it. He knows it's all in good faith. Jonathan, the only time an actor's ever truly happy is in the 5 minutes after they get the call. And then the self-doubt kicks in. Do you recognise any of that in yourself? And if it's not self-doubt after 5 minutes, what kind of things bring you down from that high, if anything?
I never recognised that. And, you know, I listened to the podcast, but I used to try and think, am I lying to myself? But getting the call, getting the job meant rehearsals were about to start. And I love rehearsals, like, and I, to me, that's the, like, you know, the fun part.
It's the sweet spot.
Yeah. Mm. So it never made sense to me that, and I know people did agree, you know, do agree with it. To me, it would be more, I should kind of approached opening night. It would be more, those are the times that would be more stressful when you start to go through that kind of awful last week of rehearsals where everything starts falling apart instead of coming together. And, you know, it's more, yeah, those were the times when I think as an actor I'm probably, you know, more doubtful or not happy as that, but never in that. In those 5 minutes, I was just delighted. If it's a job you really wanted and you've landed, and now you get to start actually creating it and, you know, working on it, and you get to meet the team. I love, you know, the sense of a team, like the sense of finding out who else is working on it and the fact that you're going to be collaborating, yeah. And stuff.
And then by
like,
3 weeks in, you've worked out who the psychopaths are and you wish.
Yeah, I guess there's a kind of, when you start thinking about everyone else and you start thinking, oh shit, am I the shit one? Or, you know, things like that sink in. But it was never off-putting. It was never like not happy. It was still something I was going to, like, you know, it's still something I really enjoyed. So I get that, and I get how other actors can feel like that, but it was never something I experienced.
So have you ever experienced that thing of going through a job, once it's opened, everybody starts thinking about when they're next unemployed and how that's going to be solved?
Oh God, yeah.
And then when everybody starts coming in and, you know, the first person says, oh, cool, I've got an audition. And then they say, oh, got it. I'm starting like the day after we finish. And then somebody else like two days later goes, yeah, I've got the thing starting a week after we finish. So it's great. I'm going to try and get a wee 5-day holiday in Mallorca. And then a couple of other people have stuff 3 weeks hence and 4 weeks. And maybe you don't. Like,
yeah. I've experienced that on theatre jobs and filming jobs. I don't think it's something we should do to each other. I'm not saying we shouldn't talk and we shouldn't kind of like inform each other and stuff, but I think we are all aware how that does make other people feel if they don't have something lined up afterwards.
Yeah.
And yeah, yeah, I've experienced it.
On that subject then, because it's glaring at me, social media. It's one of the things that this series, I think, I've chatted about a few more times, and it's something, as you know, that I still struggle with in terms of, like, how's the best way to do it, or should we even bother, or is it worthwhile? And I think you've got quite a good attitude to social media and that you haven't really ever been a big poster or sharer of work?
I think in the early days I was, when I first kind of like joined things like Twitter and stuff. I just got caught up in watching everyone else do it, and I think that's what we do at first. And I thought that that's how it worked. You had to publicize everything in order to be taken seriously, in order to be, you know, considered good, you know, it probably, if you continue down that discussion, it probably leads into all that, you know, casting directors checking Twitter follower numbers. But I soon kind of just grew out of it and just realized I was really uncomfortable with, like, and I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just saying people feel different about it. I just think there's different personalities and there's people cope with it in different ways, and it was never something that was anytime I did promote something or try to look like I was busy, I just felt sick and thought, oh, people can see through that as someone trying to look like they're busy, you know. So I just stopped doing it, and I've been happier ever since. And I started to work, it kind of coincided with this, the podcast, but I think we need to all be a little bit careful about each other too, and I think we have a responsibility to each other to not, you know, create that illusion of everything is awesome. But yeah, so that's why I'm also just not very comfortable with the which is why I said this is my worst nightmare.
Right,
I think that's why it's personality.
This is interesting to me because I think there are, Tom Goodman Hill said way back in 2015 that he's always deeply suspicious of those actors. I can't remember the exact words, but basically those actors that love the limelight. Mm. He's always deeply suspicious of those overconfident sorts. It's fair to say, I think, as someone who knows you very well, I know, that you really don't like the limelight. Mm. That you've always been someone who has said you're fine delivering someone else's lines, not so good, if it's down to you to decide what to say. So on those occasions when you have been asked to go back to St. Louise's and speak, or you have been asked the other things like that, you've always found it incredibly difficult. Yeah, that you're the family member who gets asked to do readings.
Funerals and weddings.
Yeah.
I do a great line in funerals and weddings.
So.
Because you're the actor and they ask you to get up.
So what? What do you think that is?
That how, I don't feel
how,
yeah, comfortable?
How is it that you actively chase down opportunities to stand in front of 1,000 people?
Because that's not me standing in front of 1,000 people. I do think there is something psychologically within actors wanting to be someone that isn't them. I totally think that's something to do with the fact that psychologically why we're attracted to the job. I think there's a thrill seeker kind of part that we're attracted to of the job. And I also think that there must be a certain personality that is attracted to playing 1,000 different people. Like, why be one person when you can be a million different types? And that must say something psychologically, you know, not being comfortable. I think I'm comfortable in my own skin, but we're obviously attracted to escapism, and we're obviously attracted to playing roles, and that's what I think. That's what, if you go back to what Tom says in terms of someone loving the limelight, then to me that's not the job. I think we aren't comfortable being ourselves. Maybe that's a bit too strong, but we obviously enjoy being other people.
Okay, so at this point, the kind of where the interview would normally go is me asking you what's the longest you've ever gone without a job. But I guess given that what we've just been speaking about, I think the question before that is, do you think that not getting opportunities to explore those other possibilities, to be those other people, to escape from yourself, have you found those periods difficult because of those?
Yeah, totally. My dad actually said it first without me even working it out. And this is a man who has no interest in acting. I was going to say no interest in the arts. That's wrong. That's not. He loves music and stuff. He's just not into theatre and film and TV. And yet
he would actually cross the road to avoid watching you in a theatre.
He would. To be fair, he always says it was because he'd be so nervous. You know, he doesn't understand why I would put myself through that. He did say, I don't understand why you would put yourself through that. And he wouldn't be able to sit in a seat watching because the whole time he'd just be thinking, oh shit, don't let it go wrong for her. Like, so I get that. That's the type of person he is. But he, and I just presumed he didn't get it. I presumed he loved letting me do what I do, but I didn't know that he kind of understood it until we were talking about someone that I knew, a friend. I can't even remember who it was because it was years ago, and he asked how they were getting on and when was the last time they acted, and I said I think it's been a year, year and a half, 2 years. They haven't been employed. And I'm trying to remember the way he phrased it because he just hit the nail on the head. But he said, well, how does he get to express himself then, or something like that, you know? So how does that affect him? Because obviously he's not getting an outlet, or I wish I remember the right words.
Express
just being baffled and bowled over that this, you know, man who I just assumed had no interest, that wasn't the case. It wasn't for him, but he still got it, and he still understood what it meant to artists, and he still understood how it made us feel, and it made me realize, like, after all these years, he understood why I wanted to do it as a job.
How does not acting make you feel?
Frustrated, sad. This was for a while, but I have to say it's changed for me as I've got older, because I've started to write. So,
well, you started to write quite a while ago, but
yeah, but it took a while. Like, I don't think I was that comfortable with it at the start. I was actually really nervous about doing something else. So it still took a few years for me to become comfortable with that. So the writing has really helped. But before, yeah, I would be someone who would be really down when I wasn't working, and
it wasn't to do with the financial aspect of it, because you'd be working, doing other things, making money other ways.
Exactly, I'd be back in the cafes and stuff, like, working. So I was probably still just making roughly the same amount of money. So it wasn't work. You know, I could go back to a job where I could pay the bills just about, but. It wasn't that. That was not what I wanted to do. That was, because you do it. It does something. It shouldn't, but the longer you go without working, and the longer you go without being creative, you start to, like, fester, or like you, and it becomes, you become really frustrated, and that's just not a good place. I think as it goes on, I'd like to think that we all kind of learn coping mechanisms, because it shouldn't be like that, and it doesn't mean that you're a shit actor, and it doesn't mean you've lost your acting ability, you know, the longer that it goes on. But those are the things that go through your head when you aren't acting, and I was very much like, be really pissed off, really down, not in the mood for things, because, you know, in your head you're going, am I shit? Have I lost my ability? Has it magically just, you know, kind of disappeared? And those are not nice thoughts. And they're not true.
Yeah. So what's the longest you've gone without an acting job?
I don't know specifically, but I'd hazard a guess at, like, over a year. I can't remember.
And in those periods, have you ever considered giving up?
Yeah, but very briefly, like I said, in my head, and then I know, and then I kind of laugh and go, what the fuck are you going to do?
But that's a new thing, because I remember certainly going back 5, 6, 7 more years, that would never have...
Yeah, I think there's this thing, right, about, have you ever considered giving up? I remember, like, starting off, it was almost like, do you remember people used to say to you, if you've even considered?
Someone said that in, I think Simon Darwin said that in series 1.
If you've even considered it, then you might as well give up. And I think that's wrong.
I was in the room going, oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's a real, like, it became a thing to me, like, I was actually trying to keep the phrase out of my head, like, almost as if it appeared in my head, like, you know, it's like the devil appeared or something, like, oh shit, I thought it and I didn't mean to think it, and that means I have to give up. Like, it's a real scare tactic, and I don't think it's true, because we're not all the same. We don't all have the same relationship with it. We all have different relationships, and it's okay to sometimes on a bad day think, should I give up? Why is this a big kind of, like, you know, oh shit, you thought it. it's over now. Like, I don't think we should be putting those kind of strains on ourselves. We should let our minds go where our minds want to go, because you bounce back the next day and you go, I was just having a bad day, or something's come in, or it's up to you. I think it's okay to think it. And when I say I've never really thought it that much, and I've never really thought about giving up that seriously, I think we're all lying. We are. We're lying if you don't say it's popped into your head and you've just considered to go, what would my life be if I wasn't doing this?
Sorry, I wasn't listening there. I was thinking about giving up. Was it?
Then that's okay.
Okay, well, okay.
But you should. No, I'm joking.
Should it?
No.
Is this what this is about?
No. You shouldn't. It's okay to think it. It's okay for anyone to think it. But it's not some taboo statement that if an actor, you know, utters it, then it comes true.
I've told my agent I'm quitting like 3 times and meant it. In fact, I love telling the story of the time that I went to lunch with him and told him I was quitting, and he pulled out a post-it note with some opportunities written in it. And I was like, see, if you're going to reduce down the possible opportunities that I have,
yeah, I'm sure there's
to like a post-it note.
I'm sure there's amazing actors doing really well, successful ones that did not only thought about quitting but did quit, like, you know, a few times. And so it's not, I don't think we should give that statement or that thought the weight that it carries amongst actors. I'd just love to get rid of it. It's just stupid. Let people's minds
think. A good question at the time. I was just trying to open a discussion.
It was a good question. It just hit a nerve, and I just don't like
when very hard on me and my questions sometimes.
It's not about you. It's about the
So tell me about writing. Because it seems from what you said that, and again, this isn't something that we talk about a lot and that we would ever sit and have these conversations about. So while you were talking there, it seems that something's shifted in the past 3 or 4 years, or maybe even more recently than that, that if I'd asked you 5 years ago, my sense is that if I'd said, Bruna, are you an actor-writer or a writer-actor? And I think you definitely have said you were an actor writer. Mm-hmm. And I remember one occasion chatting about something, and you said that, you know, that you loved acting more. Mm-hmm. And that way you really loved writing. You just always would love acting more. Have those two things shifted? Are you now a writer actor?
No, I don't think I'll ever call myself a writer actor. And I don't know whether that's to do with the fact that I was always an actor first. So I feel like a fraud if I was to suddenly elevate my writing like status to, like, I don't know, the same. I don't know. It's a weird one. I'll always be an actor writer. Because writing came out of acting, and I'll always have acting to thank for being a writer.
Okay.
So,
I have a question, which is, what has being a writer taught you about being an actor, or what has it illuminated in terms of the status of actors, or the kinds of things that actors do that are amazing, and the kinds of things that actors do that are fucking stupid and piss people off? Like, what have you learned from being in those rooms at ITV and Channel 4 and BBC?
Never say the fucking words that's on the page in front of them. No, we're joking.
No, go ahead. No,
that's a crap one. I'm just saying that's for, you know, as like an actor doing like script readings and like, you know, just sight readings. If you were doing like a table read of something that you were asked to come in and you haven't seen the script before, and obviously you're, you know, there's the odd word or something that you don't say as an actor, you go, well, like, I think I got most of that. Like, you know, right? I might have missed the odd word or two. And it's just so funny being a writer on the other side of that now. And you're like, they missed the word. They missed the word.
They
and
fucked you get the rhythm. Yeah. That wasn't as funny.
That wasn't how it was written. But no, those are just stupid things.
Your position in the industry is different.
As right? a writer, yeah.
Your position is so different. So you get... as a telly writer, you get a little, just got more clout or more, you know, even when you go into rooms, people want your ideas, and people want...
It's very simple, though. It's very, as I've just come to realise, they just need, because they're after the script, they want the script. Nothing can happen until they've got the script.
So they're after this little thing, this little big thing. So that's it, because it's the start of it. Then it's the start of it. You know, it's the start of something. Something begins, and everyone then starts bringing all these amazing things to the table on top of that, to build on top of that. So, yeah, you might feel a little bit more important, but it's purely because they want something out of you. You know, they need something out of you, and it's a nice feeling because you can, you know, provide it. I don't know if I'll ever become comfortable. I think I'll always just be the actor that's in the writing room. I've had limited experience with, like, you know, sitting in on auditions or watching audition tapes, and I'm just not up to it because I watch it as an actor. I don't watch it as a writer. I end up just feeling really, oh shit, or, you know, for the actor, and oh, I think they could have got that with, you know, I think with an acting head on, haven't been in that position a million times myself. And then I don't think I'm up to listening to the producer comments and stuff, you know, amongst it. It can be quite hard as an actor. So I think maybe I'll work on that. Maybe I'll get better as I continue to write. But
do you think acting has helped you as a writer? I mean, you said that it came out of acting. Do you think it's helped you be a better writer? And I'm not sure it's a follow-on question, but it's a related question, which is, do you think people that you meet in the industry, producers and stuff, do they respect your acting less than your writing? Do they respect you more as a writer because you're an actor? Like,
I don't know.
How do they work with that double identity? How do they manage that?
It's something I don't know. I kind of don't want to think about it too much. Some producers I work with seem to be aware that I'm an actor, and have seen things and mention it, and that's lovely. And I'll always go, do they mean that, or do they mean I should stick to the writing, or do they mean, you know, that all plays in my head. Some I don't even know if they're aware that I'm, you know, some have just met me as a writer, and I don't even know if they know that I'm an actor as well. So but it does play on a paranoia that I have, that that they have an opinion that I'll be better at one than the other. And it shouldn't be the case, but I did that to myself, you know. In the early stages, I was afraid of telling people I was another thing. I tried to enact in auditions. I tried to just pretend that I wasn't writing on top of that, even though during acting jobs in the theatre, I was, you know, on stage. But, like, in between shows, I was, like, writing an episode of something up in the dressing room, but not letting on to anyone that that's what I was doing. So, like, you know, the director and stuff's walking in, and and they were like, oh, your laptop's in again today. I was like, yeah, no, I'm just messing around on the laptop. But, like, it was a bad, like, thing.
I
had this thing that they were going to go, oh, she's not serious about the acting. She's writing a TV episode during the matinee and the evening.
There's also something, and I have it with, you know, say people who don't know about this podcast, and they say, you know, what else do you do? And I say, oh, like, I have this podcast, and you know that they assume the show's shit, and it has and it has four listeners, right? And it's like whenever
eyes glaze over.
Yeah, whenever I was like 26 or something, I went to Prague on a work thing, and I got business cards that said Jonathan Harden, actor, director, producer.
Did I get more on there?
And to be fair, like, at that stage, I didn't really have one that was any greater than the others. They were all pretty mediocre. But, like, I think we all have a natural thing, which is when someone introduces themselves as more than one profession.
Yeah, I think it's changing. I think it's changing, but that's a recent thing.
But, like, I mean, as with the podcast thing, and people go, it's like, you know, I've got a blog. Sure you do. It must be a bit like I write. You must see people go,
yeah, I do.
Sure you do.
I know I probably do it. I know I meet people and they probably tell me they're two things, and I go, really? I think we just all need to shift our brain into realizing that we can do more than one thing. And I think it's going that way because I think we're seeing more and more of it happen on the stage, on the TV, and we're in awe of those people, and then we aspire to be those people ourselves. But there definitely was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, that we were all really dubious and really, you know, skeptical of someone that said they did two jobs in the arts, because it's like, well, hold on, you can only have one. So what are you? And we were really obsessed with putting pigeonholes. I met when I started writing, I met actors that, you know, had met me and said, oh, I hear you've given up acting and started writing. And I was just like, what? Who said that? Who decided that? And what? And why must it be just, you know, one thing?
Because the two things can't possibly coexist.
They were telling me with their eyes and with their words, so you've given up now, haven't you? And I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'd like to think that we're all moving towards being a bit more supportive and encouraged by it. And I think it's a really good thing. I would encourage anyone to try something else that they're interested in. If it's, you know, available to them, why not? Because I think it helps. Makes you stronger.
Anything that helps you keep going and survive and pay your bills without losing hope, it's got to be a good thing.
Exactly.
And even if it's not even helping you pay the bills, but as your dad said, if it's helping you express yourself while you do the thing that you hate to pay the bills,
yeah,
then at least with writing, you can get it out of your system on your own without anybody paying anyone, you know. I suppose that takes us into a kind of final third of sorts. And that final third is really more reflective, and has to do with the things that have been learned along the way. I guess the biggest of these is about advice. So have you ever had advice from other actors, older or contemporaries or even younger, that stood out and that you've used again and again?
I remember being in a production of Dancing at Lunasa, and an older member of the cast was side stage with me waiting to go on. We'd had our beginner's call and we were waiting to go on, and they were really struggling with nerves at the side of the stage. They looked quite stressed, and I remember looking at them and saying, you've been doing this for years? And they said, it never gets easier. I just thought, oh shit, like, why don't tell me that? Like, that stood out. I'm not saying I took it on board and stuff, but it does always pop into my head, like, that it might not ever get easier. And maybe that's not to do with stage fright. Maybe that's just in general, like, as
life,
as the business, like, as the business on a whole, we have to be aware that it might not get easier. But if it's what we want to do, and if it's providing us with moments of fulfillment and joy, then fuck it, why not? Like, why not? I think that's a good life. If you're getting moments of joy and achievement and fulfillment, I'll take that. You know, okay, it's not the easiest. It's not on a trajectory where it's your money's going up. It gets easier, you're getting promoted, but
you're working less.
Yeah.
Your company car gets nicer. Yeah. Your office gets bigger.
But fuck it, who wants normal? Like, you know. I'm shit at remembering advice, which is probably why I never have it to give out. If there's something you want to try, do it. If there's something in your head that you've wanted to attempt, whether it's add another string to your bow, or whether it's do your own show, or whether it's write yourself, you know, anything, fuck it, just do it. Honestly, life's too short. And when you're out the other side, it's, you know, the achievement, and it just leads on to the next one, and, you know, it creates a hunger. And it's I just think, why sit in fear? And why sit by the phone just waiting? Because that's misery. You might as well attempt. who gives a fuck if you fail? Everyone will, you know, who's going to talk about it?
Everyone's too busy and wrapped up in their own
world. Attempt the things you want to attempt. Yeah, just go for it. Like, I know that's a very general one, but it's just one that's come out of me.
Go for it, like.
Yeah, just go for it, like. Just because it's just come out of, like, my kind of work, because it has led me to somewhere I never thought I would be. I never thought I would be writing as well as acting. And I went fuck it and tried it once. And I would just encourage anyone to kind of try that if there's something that you've thought like you might be good at. And
but do it and go for it and do it
and
right.
Go for it, yeah, do it 100%.
Do it hard.
It's scary, don't get me wrong. It's so scary. At the start, you might even think, what the fuck have I started? Because you might think that you've, you know, kind of shot yourself in the foot. But
you have a bit of advice, which you don't even know you have to give here, which is...
you're going to tell me my own advice.
Yeah, you've given me advice over the years, which has stuck with me, which...
Maybe I am good advice.
You do give good advice. But there's something about writing, actually, which in terms of your bugbears about people, whenever they say... I'm writing this thing, and it turns out they've written like two scenes out of a thing, and they're already and they're already telling everybody about it. You know, like it's finished.
Yeah, don't do that.
You know that kind of stuff of like, go for it, do it.
Yeah, do it. The first
finish it.
I remember handing something in the very early days of writing to a TV producer, and making a million excuses, which I've learned to stop doing. It needs work, and I'm going to cut it down, and it probably won't even look like that when I do the next draft. And do you know what? It's actually a bit shit. Actually, it's a lot shit, and that's not even what's going to happen in it. Actually, eventually, and I just kept on going on, and she just kind of told me to shut up, and she said, "You've done the one thing the majority of people don't do," and I was like, "What's that? Hand in a shit script?" And she was like, "No. You've handed in a completed script. It's got a start, it's got a middle, and it's got an end. You've finished it and you've handed it in. And you don't understand, but so many people don't get to that point." And that's hard. I'm not saying it's easy. That's the hard bit. Pushing to the end is the hard bit.
It's really easy to have an idea and talk about it in the pub.
Don't do that to people. Please don't do that to people. Oh God, I hate that. And it happens a lot if you kind of tell people that you're a writer. I've had so many people
pitch.
Will
you read my script?
No, not even that.
Just
start telling me from start to finish what happens in the film, in the feature film. So it opens on a...
Should I not do that?
Please don't do that. Jesus Christ, please don't do that.
I did that to you like a week and a half ago.
You do that to me all the time.
But that was a good idea. So, there's a guy loading stuff into the back of a van.
The only reason I can listen is because yours are usually short films.
Loading stuff into the back of a van, and then he knocks out...
Don't. I've had people do this. And they talk me through shot by shot, scene by scene of the film.
You don't get it.
That's not even written.
You just don't get it. You're not ready for it.
I know. It's better stick it down on paper. See?
Okay. Would your younger self consider you successful?
A lot of these answers, I think, have just shifted in my head recently. So before, I probably would have done the whole no, not at all, I'm not doing any of the things
bullshit
that I ever thought. That's what I'm about to say.
I know you're about to say recently it's changed, right?
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see how. But going back then, what did your 18-year-old self expect? Like, even what did the 13-year-old self expect? And what did the 21-year-old self who got the first gig working with people that she'd been seeing on stage in Belfast, what did those two versions of you expect from a career as an actor?
Like non-stop work. I thought that was a possibility. Non-stop work. I thought like you could literally just become someone that would go from job to job, be that good, that well-respected, that the work would just flow that way because
but like
talent
an undertaker
could
just non-stop work.
Yeah,
undertakers, that's it. Yeah.
that is what I, as naive as that was, but like, let's be honest, we all there's not, like, you know, I did a lot of people
I
do
did think that. You're totally right. I did think
so
that was a possibility.
I don't think we should make each other, ourselves feel bad for what we thought when we were 18. And I did think that. So, and that is not, that's not what happened. So, just like, you know, on paper, that's why I would, my 18-year-old self be like, oh, that's not what I thought it would be. But now, I think, yeah, I think I'm doing all right.
If your 18-year-old self was in the audience at St. Louise's and you stood on the stage?
I'd be surprised. I think I'd be surprised because there's something, there's an element in there that I never thought.
What are the things about you that would surprise your 18-year-old self?
Like, what do you mean, like, how I am as a person?
Well, you just said that your 18-year-old self would be surprised.
Oh, I think, I think at being also having a job that is at a different part of the process. As my 18-year-old self, I just wanted to act, and I was happy with that thought. I just wanted to be the actor that came in when the script was ready. I never even thought about scripts and what went into them, you know, at that age. It was never going to be something that I did. I love stories and I love storytelling.
Sure, honey, give me the script. Sure, honey.
Yeah.
Just pass
totally
over the script.
That's all I wanted. I wanted to come in at the rehearsal stage and do all the what I thought was just the creative bit, not realizing that there were many creative, you know, parts to the kind of whole machine. So if you told me as I was sitting at school, especially as someone that just didn't really like academia, like it was just that I was writing, you know, 30-minute, 60-minute scripts that were being handed in, produced and appearing on telly on top of being an actor, I would have been like, yeah, no, it's not me. It's definitely not me who's not exactly pulling in the grades here at school. Like, you know, wasn't doing too badly, but I wasn't doing brilliantly. I was just like getting by. And the fact that you'd tell me that I was like, you know, sitting at a computer each day and hitting deadlines and handing them into a thing, I'd just be like, you're right.
You're right. Whatever. You're right. If you could go back and offer that, let's say, 21-year-old, let's say the young actress graduating from university and getting her first job, if you could go back to her and offer her some advice for the intervening 17 years, what kind of things might you say to her?
I'd say take more risks, and I mean that on loads of different levels. Don't live your life not getting tattoos and not cutting your hair and not colouring your hair and not doing anything that you want to do because you've been told as an actor you need to keep your long hair with no marks. Not like, don't
fucking,
you know,
preach.
Don't. Yes, queen.
Yeah, fucking preach.
Don't live like that. Live your life. The acting jobs will be fine if you happen to have a hair dye in, if you happen to, you know, whatever it is, I can't even think it, but I know that as actors, we sometimes don't do things and try to keep ourselves as a canvas. And, you know, you want to be seen for all these parts. You want to keep your hair just so that they can do anything with it should they need to be able to do it. Because the chances are none of that's working for you. If you walk in as you, that's probably doing more
especially
in the room.
Especially in 2019.
Yeah, that's probably doing more in a room. They're probably seeing the real you. You're probably more comfortable. Just take more risks. Do what you want to do, you know.
It's good advice. I second that.
Take more risks as in, this is a weird one, but if you don't always take the safe option. If you feel like taking a risk as in turning down the reliable job because you want to go for the bigger one and stuff. I feel bad saying that because sometimes that it doesn't pay off.
I have regrets about those things. You know, I have big regrets about those things.
Yeah, so don't have the regrets.
That's hard.
It is hard, I think. maybe that one lends itself to having regrets either way, so maybe that's not great. But
I guess it's always, those are the kind of things, all these bits of advice come through the kind of the weird kaleidoscope of personal experience.
Yeah, it depends what's happening to you, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So if those things have paid off, then you go, yeah, fuck it. Whereas if they haven't and you've ended up spending 2 or 3 years kicking yourself over not taking a job that could have led to something massive, then your advice is likely to be the opposite. So I guess that's why those bits of advice are difficult.
Have a life. Get involved in things. Don't just tunnel vision yourself as an actor that only has actor mates, that only goes to acting podcasts. Play a sport. Like, you know what I mean? Go on holidays with your mates. You can have both, and it's important to have both so that you're not just a 40-50-year-old actor who didn't actually do much with their life, like didn't go to their family and friends things, kept themselves free just in case that job came in.
And never did.
Exactly. Go play football on a Tuesday night, go whatever, like go just have a life. And I wish I'd done that more when I was younger, although we just become obsessed when we're younger and all we want to do is hang around with actors and talk about acting.
Single-mindedness, and it kind of pays off in a way, I guess, to a point.
Yeah.
But at some point, as you get older, you realise, as your friends who think you're living the dream and think you have everything seem to have a hell of a lot more, and not financially, but just in terms of groups of friends and common interests, and
yeah, that would be a big one.
Would that 21-year-old look at what you're doing now and offer you any advice, or rather, as they put it, the other people, remind you of anything?
Yeah, probably not to be so hard on myself. I don't think I ever was that hard on myself when I was younger. I think that came over the years. I used to be very confident in myself, and not confident, I probably was never a confident person, but not as hard on myself. Like,
I think that's fair.
Yeah,
I think it's really fair. I think when I was younger, certainly I had a hell of a lot more to be hard on myself about.
Yeah, but we're not,
and somehow I've ended up harder on myself
as when you were older. Yeah.
As I get older,
yeah, I suppose it's only natural, like. But definitely, if you were to have a conversation with your younger self, they'd be like, wise the fuck up.
Just fucking go and do stuff. Just do stuff. Do stuff. Take risks. Do stuff.
They probably would also wonder why we were sitting doing a podcast on a Saturday night.
Because we're off drink. That's why.
Yay.
And also, this is fucking rock and roll. This is like 2019. This is winning at the game of life. Pie to water on podcast. Dog sleeping. Come on. Alrighty, so we're very nearly done. There are tons of things I could have asked that I didn't, and that I'm sure people would be like, why didn't you ask on that bit where you were talking about stage fright of an older actor, if you've ever suffered from stage fright? Why didn't you ask blah, blah, blah? But I can't ask everything, and as time moves on with these, I've decided to ditch the beat sheets and think, where do I want this to go? And in terms of where I'd like this to end, I guess it's very much as with the rest of them. And those little nuggets of advice. And also, because I know that both of us get extremely frustrated with the industry and things that go on, and that change is tectonic, and that although we're getting there extremely slowly, I think, as a kind of a final little moment, I wondered if there was anything in the industry that if I was to imaginatively appoint you queen, dictator, supreme leader, president, whatever, what kind of things in our industry would you like to see changed with a click of your fingers, click of your heels?
I would like funding not to be taken away from the working class or the people that can't afford to pay for their own training, pay for schemes, pay for classes. I don't want it to become an industry that's only available to those that can afford it. So it's a very general one in terms before I start going into like, you know, what it would entail and stuff. But
That's not your problem. You just issue the dictate. You have minions to look after detail.
I worry that that's what's happening because I see it happening and I see a certain class becoming less and less. You know, when we were starting off, and just even now, we you know, talk about it becoming something that if you've got money or if you've got a family that can pay for you to do it, then those are the people that are more and more being able to do it. And I don't want that to be the case because there's talent in all areas, in all classes. And I think that's really unfair. And I want it to be available to any child that wants to express themselves. Because can you imagine what, you know, how that feels if where you're from or what your family can afford affects whether you get to do what we've been lucky to do and express ourselves. And I would like that to happen. Does that count?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I mean, I think that's pretty solid. I can't see anybody objecting to that. Anything else you'd like to throw in?
Just for people to not pitch things that are 2 hours long in a pub.
What is the fucking
crack? If you're in a pub,
every time we sit down together, we sat down to have lunch in a cafe 2 days ago, and we always manage to sit, no matter where we are, it could be St. Leonard's, could be Belfast, could be London, we always manage to sit within earshot of the guy, always a guy, with a really loud voice,
pitching
quite frequently American, pitching a script to somebody else who generally stays silent.
I heard the hook of that one.
What was it?
And she died in the pool.
Yeah, so
I was like, oh, maybe I do want to hear the rest of that one.
If you're going to pitch in public, just don't broadcast it. Pitch, don't broadcast.
Yeah. Just write it. Let them read it.
And on that note, I have but one more question, and that is, are you in anything at the minute?
No.
Rona Taggart, it has been a pleasure. We should do this more often. I feel like it's ages since we've caught up.
I know. Can we watch Netflix now?
And that's it, episode 10 with my wife, the glorious Bruna Taggart. I hope you enjoyed it. She definitely didn't. But as I've always said, the best people for this podcast are the ones who don't like talking about themselves and whose first instinct is to say, I have nothing really to say about that. Everybody else, the ones that email me, generally white men in their 40s, like myself, well, soon to be, if someone says I would make a great interviewee for the Honest Actors podcast, I instantly know that that is not the case. And so I've been trying to get Bruna to do this for a long time, and as I said in the interview, a few things really genuinely surprised me, and I really, really enjoyed catching up with her in a way that I think couples don't do a lot of, to be honest. So I hope you enjoyed it too. Little insight into a less than regular conversation in our home. Episode 11, the sequel to episode 10, but in no way related, comes in a fortnight. I hope you'll enjoy that too. And in the meantime, take care of yourself. Speak to you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh.
Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.